We'll be reading from Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is also Srimad Bhagavatam. And we're going to be taking a look at the chapter entitled The Rasa Dance Introduction. It's 10. This is chapter 29. As you may know, the famous Krishna book is a summary study of the 10th canto. Srila Prabhupada was thinking that, just in case he left this world before finishing the 10th canto or even getting to it, still, there's no loss because everyone has Krishna book. And he actually said that Krishna book is his favorite book. When devotees would ask Srila Prabhupada questions about details in the Krishna book. Details even more intricate than what's the avatar technology, different nomenclatures and minute distinctions. When devotees would ask Srila Prabhupada questions like that about Krishna book, he replied, Krishna book means simply read it and enjoy it. Krishna book is the greatest companion for all devotees, for the brahmacharis, as Shesha Prabhu can tell you. At night before taking rest, it was the habit to have hot milk and hear Krishna book. And for the grihasthas, after a long day of work or household affairs or tending the family before retirement, they can hear Krishna book. We'll read a few paragraphs from the beginning of the chapter and then we'll discuss. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that the Rasa dance took place on the full moon night of the Sharad season. From the statements of previous chapters, it appears that the festival of Govardhan Puja was performed just after the dark moon night of the month of Kartika, and thereafter the ceremony of Bhratri Dhitiya was performed. Then the wrath of Indra was exhibited in the shape of torrents of rain and hailstones, and Lord Krishna held up Govardhan Hill for 7 days until the 9th day of the moon. Thereafter, on the 10th day, the inhabitants of Vrindavan were talking among themselves about the wonderful activities of Krishna. And the next day, Ekadasi was observed by Nanda Maharaj. On the next day, Dwadashi, Nanda Maharaj went to take bath in the Ganges and was arrested by one of the men of Varuna. Then he was released by Lord Krishna. Then Nanda Maharaj, along with the cowherd men, was shown the spiritual sky. In this way, the full moon night of the Sharad season came to an end. The full moon night of Ashvina is called Sharad Purnima. It appears from the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam that Krishna had to wait another year for such a moon before enjoying the Rasa dance with the gopis. At the age of 7 years, he left to Govardhan Hill. Therefore, the Rasa dance took place during his 8th year. From the Vedic literatures, it appears that when a theatrical actor dances among many dancing girls, the group dance is called the Rasa dance. When Krishna saw the full moon night of the Sharad season, decorated with various seasonal flowers, especially the Malika flowers, which are very fragrant, he remembered the gopis' prayers to goddess Katyayani, wherein they prayed for Krishna to be their husband. He thought that the full moon night of the Sharad season was just suitable for a nice dance. So their desire to have Krishna as their husband would then be fulfilled. The words used in this connection in Srimad Bhagavatam are Bhagavan Api. This means that although Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus has no desire that needs to be fulfilled because he's always full of six opulences, he still wanted to enjoy the company of the gopis in the rasa dance. Bhagavan Apeen signifies that this dance is not like the ordinary dancing of young boys and young girls. The specific words used in Srimad Bhagavatam are yoga mayam upasrita, which means that this dancing with the gopis is on the platform of yoga maya, not mahamaya. The dancing of young boys and girls within the material world is in the kingdom of mahamaya, or the external energy. The rasa dance of Krishna with the gopis is on this platform of yoga maya. The difference between the platforms of yoga maya and mahamaya is compared in the Chaitanya Charitamrita to the difference between gold and iron. From the viewpoint of metallurgy, gold and iron are both metals, but the quality is completely different. Similarly, although the rasa dance and Lord Krishna's association with the gopis appear like ordinary mixing of young boys and girls, the quality is completely different. The difference is appreciated by great Vaishnavas because they can understand the difference between love of Krishna and lust. We'll stop there. Om Gyanatimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militangina Tasmai Shri Guru Vedana
Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Guru Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadara Shivasadevi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
The subject matter of Krishna's most confidential pastime, the Rasa-lila, inspires us to yearn for what is real love. We need humility in approaching the Rasa-lila because we have to suspend our conceptions that we actually know what love is. In the material world, we have a glimmer of an understanding of what is love. Just like through the clouds, you can see sometimes a glimmer of sunlight these past few days comes through and we get all hopeful. Oh, maybe the sun is going to come out in full. So in material existence, you see a glimmer of what real love is. And of course, even that glimmer drives human beings insane. To understand Rasa-lila, of course, requires pure devotion. Without that pure devotion, and without hearing through parampara, it's so easy to make offenses in approaching Rasa-lila. Unless we hear from the right source, we can easily become further motivated in material desire. Oh, this is what's going on. Krishna has his girlfriends. Okay, I'll have my girlfriends and boyfriends. The improper hearing of Krishna's confidential pastime can lead to degradation. Therefore, the subject matter is presented in the 10th canto, as you know, after you prepare yourself through 9 cantos. You know that, how the 10th canto is the smiling face of Krishna. You begin your study of Bhagavatam at the feet, the lotus feet, the first canto. Just like when you're looking at the deities or any respectable person, you focus on the feet and then lift your vision gradually up. Then why, you might ask, do we have Rasa-lila in the Krishna book, which is distributed in mass? It's there because Srila Prabhupada has put so much time and energy into crafting the presentation of the Rasa-lila in the Krishna book so that no one can make take offense. He gives all the full explanations of why Krishna is doing what he's doing. He just doesn't present the Leela. He presents the Siddhanta, the Shastra conclusion. And he does that in a way that's easy to read. Krishna book resembles a storybook. Therefore, some people say, it's just a book of stories. But Krishna knows you like stories. So he doesn't give you fantasy or mythology. Krishna says, okay, here's some stories about what I'm actually doing. So Krishna book is full of stories that actually have happened, are happening, and will continue to happen in the future. That is why we say Nitya Leela, Krishna's eternal pastimes. His pastimes are never finished. He enacts them again and again and again. And each time, they're ever fresh, like they've never happened before. And as one becomes advanced in spiritual life, every time you hear Krishna's pastimes, even though from the material point of view you've heard them before, each time, the pastimes are fresher and fresher. The sages of Naimisaranya, they say that at the beginning of the Bhagavatam. Bhayam tuna vachipyama uchama shloka vikrame. Yes, shinvatam rasayana swadu swadu pade pade. We never tire of hearing about Krishna's activities. Those who actually know the science of rasa, they relish hearing everything that Krishna does again and again with every step that they take. Swadhu, swadhu, pade, pade. You can tell that you're advancing in bhakti when you can hear about Krishna again and again without that feeling that, oh, I've heard that pastime before. Come on, give some new details. Tell us something different. Tell us something new. It's a great realization when you attend a Bhagavatam class by someone you consider a junior devotee or an equal, and they start speaking about Krishna, and you get some extraordinary realization through the sound vibration. Then you understand. Yeah. Again, let's consider what is part of real humility. I don't really know so much what is love, although I'm attracted to love. In material existence, there's a glimmer of real love. That glimmer of real love causes so much trouble. I was speaking in Los Angeles about how biochemicals, neurochemicals, are said by some to be the solution not only to the destructive behavior of human beings in terms of their morals, destroying the environment, the capability of destroying the world through nuclear weapons, chemical weapons, environmental destruction, but also such persons claim that human beings need help in their relationships through chemicals. The idea is that, according to them, technology has evolved mightily. But the human capacity to have relationships has not evolved along with the technology, hasn't kept pace with the technology. So they theorize that human beings are evolving from the lower forms and evolving from primitive human beings. And those primitive human beings just lived for 30, 31 years and then died in primitive hunter-gatherer societies, Neanderthals and whatever they theorize. So, although the technology of human society has expanded so mightily, the human ability to have relationships hasn't evolved enough. And therefore, human beings today, through evolution, only have the capacity to handle relationships for a short time. because the human beings are hardwired to be able to conduct relationships in a 31 or 32 year lifespan. Even a few hundred years ago, people died at the age of 35 in London or Paris or whatever. That was normal. It was normal for a woman to die at childbirth. But now, due to the glories of science, human beings are living longer. But some scientists are saying, prominent scientists are saying, but although you're living longer, you don't have the hardware brought about through the evolutionary process to conduct relationships over a long period of time. So people want those steady relationships. And the scientists argue that, indeed, they agree, rather, that steady relationships are beneficial for the human being. But what to do? The human being doesn't have the hardware through evolution to stage a steady relationship. Let's say a few hundred years ago, you marry at 18 or 19, and one of you would be dead by the time you're 31 or 32. So you didn't have to really worry about long-term relationship. Death would take care of it all. You got a bad partner, bad husband or wife, don't worry. One of you is going to be gone soon. But now that people are, at least in the first world, living till their 70s and 80s, suddenly you have this problem that they're living long, but they don't have the capacity to have long-term relationships. Therefore, the divorce rate in countries unlike this one, where people still marry, the divorce rate is so sky high. Like in the USA, for example, just over 50% of all first marriages end in divorce. And then the percentage increases with your second and third marriage. Third marriage gets up to 75% failure. So this is pathetic. Of course, as you know, here in New Zealand, who worries? Only devotees worry about getting married. What to do? Number one, human beings want long-term relationships. Number two, scientists will agree long-term relationships are beneficial for the individual and society. Number three, solution, neurochemicals. That buzzy feeling you get when you fall in love, it's as powerful as a drug. Indeed, it's a brain drug. So why not synthetically produce that brain drug? And so when you're having a relationship problem, you just get a spray, oxytocin spray. That sparkle is back, that magic is back. What do you think? The argument is, you might as well take advantage of what science can do, because human beings haven't evolved enough. Evolution hasn't, proceeded fast enough in terms of the development of human relationship capacity. So why not? That buzzy feeling when you fall in love, that oxytocin, the dopamine that flows. You may remember what it's like. You're elated. You're like on cloud nine. That's all neurochemicals. And you can actually become addicted to falling in love, just like people become addicted to drugs. Because indeed, when you so-called fall in love, these drugs are flowing in the brain. So why not synthesize these drugs and make them available to people? And that way they can take shelter of neurochemistry and have a better chance for long-term relationships. What do you think? Yeah, the couples here having a tough month or a tough year, there are difficult patches, and even devotee relationships. Just go to your local pharmacy, Get some oxytocin spray. Once again, zing goes the strings of your heart. Maybe. Now, some persons object. In the UK, there was a famous theater play based on relationship enhanced by neurochemicals. And so the young man and young woman, they were using these chemical aids. But then the lady started having second thoughts. What was she thinking? Well, is this really you? Or am I just feeling the chemicals? Am I really getting a natural relationship buzz? Or are we both just, getting affected by the chemicals? How do I know what's the real you? What's your real love? And what was the guy's reaction? Hey, whatever it is, let's just go with it. She was in all kinds of intellectual contortions, and he was just being practical. Hey, having a good time? Never mind how it happens, just... So then another problem that scientists feel they should address for the sake of long-term relationships is that, generally speaking, after the initial phase of passion in a material relationship, the woman, generally speaking, gets bored of the passionate interactions, whereas the man, the material man, maintains that interest up until death. So what to do about this? It's theorized that a prime cause of relationship breakdown is that the man, has his tiger desires, his animalistic desires, but the woman's bored with it all. She's got her children, and that's her main thing, her children. And while this guy is still in jungle consciousness, and so then what does a guy usually do? He turns to pornography on the internet. He goes after someone else. So the scientists say, we'll come to the rescue. Mm-hmm. We can synthesize testosterone, which increases the libido. It increases the jungle desires. And so if you just administer some of that testosterone to the lady, she once again revives the jungle capacity, and in this way, they stay together happily ever after. They got it all figured out, huh? Hearing Rasa Leela requires a humility that we don't have it all figured out. We want love, but we need purification to just get a glimpse of what is real love. Krishna, through his Madhurya Leela, is teaching us, you don't know what you're talking about, and you don't know what you're missing. You think you've got it all. You think you're so satisfied, you're going to be fulfilled. You know nothing. Watch this. What's the first thing we heard in that first few paragraphs in the Krishna book? That refutes any material conception of what Krishna is about. How can you accuse Krishna? How can you dare think that what Krishna is doing is material when he staged the Rasa-lila when he was 8 years old? He's sticking that fact in your nose. How can you think that there's any drop of material contamination? What 8-year-old boy can stage a Rasa-lila? And stimulate the transcendental, pure, impeccable conjugal feelings of Krishna's devotees, his dearest devotee. 8 years old. Those first few paragraphs in Krishna book are based on the verse, the first verse of the 29th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canon. Bhagavan api te ratri sada dot pulavalika vicharantum manaschakre yogamaya upasya. So we heard Srila Prabhupada explain, Bhagavan api, although he's Bhagavan, perfect and complete, Ompurna, has all opulence unlimitedly, Sad Aishvarya Purna. Not a little bit of wealth, a little bit of beauty, a little bit of knowledge, but unlimited in all six opulences. That's why you read an introduction of the Krishna book. There have been persons with a little bit of wealth in human history, a little bit of beauty, a little bit of knowledge, etc. But never have you met anyone in the history of humanity who's unlimitedly deep in all these six opulences at the same time. Therefore, anyone who knows actually what is God will accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God, if you actually know what is God. So although Krishna is self-sufficient, he has that ability described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, known as Swaraja Lakshmi. He can independently fulfill all his desires. He has unlimited desires and the unlimited ability to satisfy all his desires. Nevertheless, he still wants to have Rasleela. So first we have to understand this point, how it is that the self-satisfied seeks satisfaction. A deep answer to that question is that the Krishna prema of the gopis is so superlative that even the self-satisfied wants to taste that and wants to come under the control of their love. So this paradox is the beginning of the Bhagavatam's description of Rasa-lila. Yes, he is Bhagavan. He is unlimitedly, inconceivably full in the opulences. Still, those Vrindavan knights get to him, attract him. We, the other day, talked about that night in Vrindavan, which actually had the duration of millions of years. That night, by the arrangement of Yogamaya, turned into the length of the night of Brahma, 4,320,000,000 years. 4 billion or 4 million? Hmm? 4,320,000,000 years. In the material world, you know, when someone's karma gives them a happy night, whether they're hooking up or have a long-term relationship, they glorify. Oh, what a night. Oh. Lusty teenagers long for that. And of course, in countries like New Zealand, the parents tell their 13, 14, 15-year-old daughters, just move your boyfriend in, have a night like that. You get just a drop of perverted pleasure, and you're mesmerized. Look what Krishna does on the spiritual platform with the spiritual forms of his purely spiritual associates. The night becomes 4,320,000,000 years. Find a man or woman who can do that for you. No, The conditioned soul is harassed by biology and psychology. You've got biological impediments, and you've got psychological impediments. And yet you go around saying, oh, what a night. You're destroying yourself physically, you're destroying yourself psychologically, you're piling up bad karma for yourself in terms of reactions, and yet you're singing, oh, what a night. You can't see the whole picture. You don't know, even materially, what you're doing to yourself, what to speak of spiritually, as you descend deeper into the illusion of the bodily conception of life. Because that activity is the essence of the bodily concept of life. So you think you're enjoying, oh, what a night, but actually the shackles, you're making the shackles on you tighter and tighter. It takes knowledge to see this. But Krishna is showing you the greatest freedom. I want to come under the control of my pure devotee's love. Even though I'm perfect and complete, own born, and satisfied in myself, I want to become indebted to these devotees because their Krishna prema is inconceivably unsurpassable. You know, Krishna is going to play his flute. That flute is going to be like poison that enters into the ears of the young gopi girls. They'll become possessed by that flute sound. This is the idea. When I say idea, I don't mean theory. This is the reality behind hearing the Hare Krishna mantra. The Hare Krishna mantra is actually the sound of Krishna's flute. And if we would actually hear it properly, we would have the full presence of Krishna. A few days ago, we briefly spoke about the stimulants for ecstatic love. Now just see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His whole package of pure love. It is not boring, it is not bland, it is not some kind of religious theology, catechism statements. It is unlimitedly full of variegatedness, the varieties that you long for. So Krishna relishes the stimulus, the udipanas of ecstatic love. We spoke briefly before. First of all, there's the time. That is a stimulant for ecstatic love. The time is the autumn season, full moon night. That's stimulating. By Krishna's arrangement, of course. That timing, the full moon night in the autumn season, is encouraging Krishna. Now is the time. Now is the time. People try to imitate in the material world. Now is the time for romance. They're trying to imitate Krishna. What's another udipana? The place, the Vrindavan forest. Where, out of season, the jasmine flowers are spreading their fragrance. And Krishna's dearest devotees, they're going to wear garlands of jasmine flowers. But jasmine flowers aren't supposed to be in the autumn season. But for the sake of Krishna's pleasure, the jasmine flowers have blossomed and are spreading their fragrance. What else about that place, that stimulant for ecstatic love? The place, the Vrindavan forest. Besides the jasmine flowers, there's also the Kumuda, the lotus flowers. What are they doing being open at night? Lotus flowers close up when night comes. But for Krishna's pleasure, the lotus flowers opened that night. And then, of course, the persons involved. They're also a stimulant for Krishna's ecstatic love. The beautiful gopi girls. The most exquisitely beautiful women in all existence. Nothing compares in the material or even the spiritual world. Nothing compares to the beauty of these young gopis. And for Krishna's pleasure to add excitement to the situation, some of them are already married. Because in Vedic culture, girls, they get married when they're 8. So some of them were married, some of them weren't. Now, that parakeya element, of that element of Krishna's dealing with married girls is a creation by Yogamaya to add excitement to the whole pastime. It adds that element of fear of being caught, the allure of doing something out on the edge. All that is there, perfectly and pure in Krishna's pastimes. So Srila Prabhupada takes the trouble to explain to us, very painstakingly, that what is the highest thing in the spiritual world, Krishna's parakeya, relationships with married girls, is the most abominable thing in the material world. Because the material world is the perverted reflection, the upside down reflection of the spiritual world. So these understandings have to be firmly embedded in us. How can you accuse Krishna of dancing with others' wives? I remember at a program in Sydney, one gentleman, older gentleman from India, interrupted my program shouting how Krishna does abominable things. He causes fighting in the battle of Kurukshetra. He dances with others' wives. So he was yelling right in the middle of the program. And I just couldn't take that stand, you know, just being quiet. Someone offends Krishna publicly, I have to respond. So I accused him back. No, you are dancing with others' wives. Your wife is Krishna's property. It's not your wife. You have stolen Krishna's property and you're dancing. What do you mean? It's my wife. I said, it's your energy? Your wife is composed of your energy? So actually Krishna is not dancing with anyone's wife. He's dancing with his own energy. Everything belongs to him. But just to add excitement to the pastime, Yogamaya arranges that the gopis have husbands, some of them, just to add flavor. How are we going to get away from our husbands and be with Krishna? But actually, everyone belongs to Krishna, the husbands too. Now bear in mind that when Krishna plays his flute in the middle of the forest, the married gopis, some of them have children, they're nursing their children. Some of them are baking wheat cakes. Some of them are doing other household duties. Some are feeding, serving the evening meal to the husbands. But when that flute sound enters the ear, it steals their mind. That's why Krishna is known as Manohara. He's a thief. Through the flute sound, he steals their mind, their steadiness, their chastity, their sense control, their discipline, their respectability. He steals it all. They have no choice but to race out to the forest to regain the stolen goods. They have to race out to the forest in the middle of the night in order to regain what has been stolen. And what has been stolen? The very core of their being. So they drop their babies, those who have appear to have children. This is not biological stuff. This is the spiritual energy. They drop their husbands, those who are married. They drop their household duties. They don't even dress properly in their rush to race out to be with Krishna. They put the jewelry ornaments in the wrong places. They put the tops of their garments on the bottom and the bottoms of their garments on the top. And their husbands are protesting. Their brothers, if they're not married, their brothers and fathers are protesting. What are you doing? What is this? What is this? This all adds drama to Krishna's pastime. It's all on the pure spiritual platform. There's not one drop of matter involved. So you can just see the scene. The unmarried gopis are under the protection of their father and brothers. They hear the sound of the flute at night and they drop everything and race out. Imagine what the fathers and brothers are saying. They say, what is this, where are you? Those who are married, imagine what their husbands are saying. Some of them even have, apparently, have children. All those varieties of complicated situations are arranged by Yogamaya for Krishna's pleasure. They race out in the middle of the night into the forest to reclaim their stolen property. Now, the arrangements of Yogamaya are so perfect and complete in supporting Krishna's pastimes that Yogamaya creates duplicates of the gopis who are married. So the real gopis in their spiritual forms leave home, leave their husbands, and then Yogamaya pacifies the husbands with duplicates. So that way the husbands are peaceful. Okay. You didn't go. Now, can you do something like that? In your perverted attempts to enjoy? How extraordinary is the love of these devotees that Krishna is arranging all this? And then consider, how can Krishna feel that he's successful in his youth without loving affairs? Isn't that what all teenagers want? To have a successful teenage romance? Remember how bewildered you were? How crazy you were? Those of you who indulged in that way? That desire is in you because it's there perfect and complete, unlimitedly in Krishna. Rupa Goswami explains, Kaishoram Sapali Karoti Kalyan Kunje Biharam Hari. Lord Hari perfects his youth by engaging in loving affairs in the groves of Vrindavan. So it's Krishna perfecting his youth. He's self-satisfied, but I'm young. What do you want out of me? Where are the girls? And of course, Krishna doesn't deal with any material bodies or personalities. This is all pure spiritual energy. He's making his youth fruitful, complete, and perfect. The moon is there to help. As you know, the moon is one of the part of the stimulating, ecstatic love. What is the moon doing? Just by the sight of the full moon in the autumn season sky, that in of itself is stimulating ecstatic love. It's stimulating Krishna. It's stimulating his consorts. In the degraded material world, sometimes people have that expression. I remember in my youth there was a popular blues song, "The nighttime is the right time to be with the one you love." It's all perversion, degraded perversion of what Krishna is doing. When that full moon is there, in the autumn season, in that night, Krishna indeed, he sees all that. Sukadeva Goswami. Bhadarayani explains, Viksharantam Manuschakre. He sees that scene. He sees the moon. And he turns his mind. Rantam Manuschakre. He turns his mind toward enjoying in the forest with his consorts. So that moon causes Krishna to turn his mind in that way. The moon makes it clear this is the right time. Also, the moon is illuminating the whole Vrindavan forest. So you have just the amount of gentle lighting for the pastime. And the moon is cooling the forest with its soft rays from the heat of the day. So Krishna gets the perfect support of every ingredient. When people seek to have their degraded enjoyment in the material world, they struggle so hard to arrange all the stimulants and all the scenery and the situation. Desperately trying to squeeze pleasure out of the material world. So much thought goes into it. Let's package the lust this way. No, let's repackage it that way. Let's try to spice it up this way. Let's try to spice it up that way. And then after flailing at each other, year after year, what do you finally do? Ah, anyway, get out of here. But first you balance and you try, right? We'll package it this way. We'll sprinkle it with this spice. We'll do it like this. We'll arrange like that. Finally you get tired. And you blame the other person. Ah, you're no more fun anymore. Get out of here. I gotta get a new one. We desperately try. We desperately struggle. We want what Krishna has. We want to be the enjoyer, the proprietor, the master, but it's impossible. Remember we heard in Bhagavatam first canto how Krishna is actually the enjoyer. Our desire to enjoy is just wishful thinking. It's a dreamy wisp. I will be the enjoyer. It can't be, in fact. So the process of bhakti teaches you how to see everything in relation to Krishna's pleasure. And then you let go of your long-cherished ambition over many lifetimes to be the enjoyer. So when you actually hear Rasa-lila from a proper source, with a proper understanding, you start to lose your cherished desire to enjoy the material world. Therefore, Sukadeva Goswami explains that for one who hears Rasa-lila with Shraddha, with proper consciousness, you actually become cleansed of material desires. But, the acharyas explain, you have to become qualified to take that medicine. I often explain that there are some very strong Ayurvedic medicines, for example, that you just can't take right away. You need preparation. The Ayurvedic doctors have to prepare your system for taking that powerful medicine. So similarly, in hearing about Krishna's loving affairs, you have to have your system prepared, and then the cure works. Otherwise, if you take that strong medicine prematurely, it can cause great problems to your health. So in Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada has very carefully presented Krishna's intimate pastimes, very carefully. So that you won't make offense. And when we are ready through devotional service, through maturation in devotional service, when we are ready, our material desires can become extinguished by hearing about Krishna's pastimes with his most intimate devotees. That ghost that's haunting us to be the enjoyer leaves. So Shukadeva Goswami makes that point. For the properly qualified medical patient whose system is prepared, the antidote to the disease of material lust is hearing about Krishna's pastimes. Because instead of, when you hear Krishna's pastimes, instead of wanting to imitate him, you want to cheer Krishna onward. You are the supreme enjoyer. Govindamani Purusham Tamam Bhajami. How can I assist in your pleasure instead of imitate you as the enjoyer? When Krishna, at the end of Bhagavad Gita, says, Sarva Dhamma Prityaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja, abandon all concocted varieties of Dharma and take the real Dharma, surrender to me. This is Krishna's flute playing. Just come to me. Don't worry. Just like the gopis, they didn't worry about social inhibitions, restrictions, protocols. Krishna's flute playing stole their mind, stole everything about them, and they had to race into the forest to see that great thief. In the middle of the night, they did that in the forest. Young girls. Properly hearing this pastime causes us to reflect on what is real love. We want love, but the bhakti yogi is yearning to go to a higher platform of love. That doesn't mean we mistreat devotees around us. Look. That doesn't mean we mistreat anyone, devotee or not. But we see the whole picture. The material world just has a glimmer of love. That glimmer of love in the material world is based on the unlimited love of the spiritual world. Let me learn how to deal with all living entities so that everyone can taste what is real love. Let me not inhibit anyone's real love. So it is a part of spiritual advancement to know how to deal with love in bhakti. It's not that we treat others in a mechanical, harsh way because actually there's no love in the material world, so therefore. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? The real devotee is dear to everyone, and everyone is dear to that devotee. So you express that by encouraging everyone how to increase their service to Krishna. And you appreciate devotees' service to Krishna. That is the real love. Bhakti is the love religion. It's the love yoga, but no one knows what is real love. Although everyone wants that real love. Just like it's reported by the yoga societies themselves in the USA that their number one problem in the yoga clubs in the USA is promiscuity. They're having national conferences about what to do. The men yoga teachers are gaming on the classes full of women yoginis. And the female yoga teachers are gaming on the few men who come to the yoga classes. It's just a whole mess. And so they say this is their number one problem. You know, everyone's there in their yoga tights, you know, and flexing their bodies. And I remember many years ago, when I was, for my health, I had to go to yoga classes. And I remember the yoga teacher. She was a lady in her late 40s, and she was demonstrating various postures. The she would demonstrate a posture. I think it was like the cobra, where you wind up in a position like that. She said, girls, this is the posture you do on the beach when you want to show that you're doing yoga while checking out all the talent on the beach. So these yoga schools are admitting, at least in the USA, I know New Zealand and Australia are different. But this is what's really going on in the name of yoga. How to love in bhakti begins by loving devotional service. Caring for devotees is actually love. It's the love program. We love the way devotees serve Krishna, how they're dedicated to Krishna. And by loving Krishna's devotees, you capture Krishna's attention. So that very thing that we think we know so much about, actually we're very ignorant about, how to love properly. And the whole bhakti process is meant to train us how to love, how to really be loving, and how to give love and receive love. Just like the six loving exchanges, some of you mentioned in Shesha Prabhu's seminar, the Dati Pradivinati. You may wonder, well, what's that got to do with exchanging love? Okay, I give you prasad, you give me prasad, big deal. Yeah. I give you a gift, you give me a gift. What's so intense about that? I reveal my mind, you reveal your mind. And that revealing of the mind mentioned by Rupa Goswami is not that, you know, hey, you want to hear a wild thought I had? No, it's revealing your mind about what increases bhakti and what diminishes bhakti. Sometimes we mistake what that revealing of the mind is all about. We think it just means opening your mind and just, hey, you want to know? Want to know the wild thoughts I have, the garbage I have? No. You can find, this is disturbing my devotional service, or this is helping my devotional service. So you may think, well, where's the impact to those six loving exchanges? How can it compare to the impact that Maya's dealings give? So many men these days, they have the pornography problem because they're looking for that impact. They're saying to the material energy, when you go on the internet and dial up the pornography, so to speak, you're saying to Maya, just hit me right between the eyes, knock me over. Men are very visually stimulated. Sometimes they come to me and say, well, you know, since I have to get married, you know, please, Maharaj, make sure it's a visually stimulating package. In Krishna's pastimes, you see the perfection of visual stimulation, the moonlight, the trees in the Vrindavan forest shimmering in the moonlight, the beautiful forms of the all-spiritual consorts of Krishna. Krishna has a desire to hear the sweetness of their voices, to see their tenderness, to witness their dancing and musical singing abilities. And he wants them also to become enchanted by his voice. So it's a mutual exchange. What can Krishna do? His own internal potency has manifested such an unlimitedly enjoyable affair. He doesn't have to go outside of himself to do that. We were briefly discussing the other day how Sri Sri Radha Krishna means the reciprocation of love. Krishna, by way of his internal potency, his own Shakti, his own personal potency, he has three energies: external, internal, and marginal. We're the marginal Shakti. We can choose which energy we're going to come under the influence of, the external or the internal. With Krishna's internal potency, he's doing things. His internal potency manifests the most perfect recipient of his love, the most perfect lover to him. That's manifest by his internal potency. Now you can understand more why we're so envious of Krishna. We can't do that. This Bhagavan Api, although he's Bhagavan, he still desires to enjoy those nights in Vrindavan. He's not lacking. What happens when a man or a woman wants to turn to a lover? It means I'm lacking. The man thinks, I'm lacking that female charm and tenderness. I'm missing that. So I go outside of myself. I take that risk to go outside of myself to become complete. And the woman is thinking, I don't function well without a man around. I'm missing that male stuff. I feel incomplete. But for Krishna, it's not like that. He's perfect and complete. Everyone he's dancing with is his own energy. So particularly, his internal potency manifests the topmost partner. Unlimitedly qualified to fulfill Krishna's desires. Having the ability to love Krishna to such an extent that Krishna himself wonders about it. Where does this loving ability come from? Although it actually comes from him. Well, what's it like to love me in this way? What is she tasting in her love for me? What is she experiencing? I want to know what it's like. But he can't do that as Krishna. Does that mean Krishna's limited? No. He does it as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Narayana. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Radha Krishna combined. Krishna takes the position of Srimati Radharani and loves himself to experience what it's like to love Krishna. That is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So the perfection of the love quest is in bhakti. We turn our attention away from the fever of the body and the mind. And we focus on giving pleasure to Krishna. In that communal act of giving pleasure to Krishna, amongst the devotees, we can feel what is real love for each other. I'm trying to please Krishna. You're trying to please Krishna. The care for devotees, the encouraging of devotees, even sometimes it's difficult. There's no doubt about it, in Kali Yuga, any kind of social interaction is difficult, and that problem can also be there amongst devotees, we admit it. Nevertheless, you know that when relationships with devotees are going properly, it is so intoxicating, it is so nice when they're going properly. And in fact, I realize that's why there's agony when relationships with devotees become problematic. Because in the society of devotees, you've tasted real human relationships, real love. And then someone disappoints you, someone mistreats you or others. It's agony because this isn't the way it's supposed to be. Prabhu, we're not supposed to be like this. How could you do this? How could you be like that? Why don't you understand? I'm trying to serve Krishna. You're trying to understand. You're trying to serve Krishna. Why don't you understand why you... ignoring my sincerity. Chaitanya Prabhu and I were discussing how we have a society in which practically everyone is being sincere, but still sometimes there are social problems, interaction problems. So if you discount or if you don't take into account a devotee's sincerity, that devotee becomes very horrified and angry. So we have to learn how to give devotees credit for having sincere motivations most of the time, but still they're making mistakes. It's interesting how to correct someone, how to acknowledge faults when the motivation is sincere, but still a fault happened. It takes maturity and sensitivity. You have to work for a correction while maintaining the understanding that there's some basic sincerity in the person. This art of caring for devotees and being with devotees is so crucial that Krishna himself says, those who say they're my devotees are not my devotees. My devotees are those who are devotees of my devotees. And Narottam Das Thakur sings, Tandara Charna Sevi Bhakti Sanivas, Janame Janame Hoi E. Birth after birth, I just want to be amongst devotees. Because there is real love. But that real love takes some time to develop. It's not a sentimental thing. You walk in the door, yeah, even a bhakti, and even a few years later, okay, I'm ready to love, Prabhus. It's not like that. Love is developed through devotional service. Devotional service is actually love. We explained this before. So our bhakti yoga training is about how to love through devotional service. Because without service to Krishna, where is the love? In the material world, so many singers are always crooning, where is the love? Where did the love go? You've lost the loving feeling. Who are you loving now? You're not loving me. Now the love bug just bites and then disappears. It's kind of like bed bugs. They don't have bed bugs in New Zealand. In the USA, they have a huge epidemic of bed bugs. They have bed bugs in New Zealand? Well, not like the USA, Canada. Huh? So you're sleeping at night. These little bugs come out, bite you, take your blood, and then they disappear. Where are they? You wake up in the morning, you got welts all over you. Where are those bugs? You can't find them, you can't see them. Just similarly, you get bitten by the love bug. You got welts all over you, you think our enjoyment. And then you okay, where'd the bug go? Bug's gone. And under Maya, you're so foolish. What do you say? Let me go to sleep and get bitten again. Some people are allergic to bed bugs. I am. And so when I'm touring USA and I get bitten by them, because they're just everywhere. It's an epidemic. Because of climate change. My arm swells up, it turns red, and so that is like material enjoyment. Oh, look how swollen I am. Look how red I am. I'm feeling all right. Let the bug bite me again. It's love. I even get a little feverish. But in Maya, we like the fever of material enjoyment. Oh, I'm burning. I'm feeling good. You compliment your temporary partner. You give me fever. Fever in the morning, fever at night. You give me fever. Madness. Krishna is not leaving us to suffer with such delusions. He simultaneously gives us the purificatory process, and then he shows us the pinnacle of his pastimes. You think you know something about love? Hear this from an authorized source. When you're qualified and understand with humility, you know nothing about love. Krishna is the Suratanath. He's the Lord of love. That humbles you, and it gives you the goal to strive for. Let me become qualified to love Krishna. So a devotee always prays to Krishna, I don't know really what love is. Please take me to a higher level. Let my heart be captured by devotional service in this association of devotees. And then gradually we realize devotional service is not a mechanical activity. It is the offering of love. Just like Satsarupa Das Goswami, he wrote in his Vyasa Puja offering how in the very early days at Second Avenue, when they were just very, the beginnings of the first band of devotees, because Srila Prabhupada had struggled in New York City for one whole year without any followers. So you think you go through rejection on Sankirtan? One whole year, no followers, struggling alone in New York City, experiencing the New York winter. You're from India, Calcutta, you've been in Mumbai, Ahmedabad, and then you go through a New York winter when you're in your late 60s, and don't know anyone, and no form of support. Srila Prabhupada described how he spent that time studying the Americans, seeing where they were at. Very strategic. Going to bookshops, seeing what they're reading, studying the people, seeing the cultural things they're interested in. So finally, after doing some loft preaching, Mukunda Maharaj told me, he said, you didn't start the loft program, this is Prabhupada's program. Prabhupada was preaching via a loft. He would have programs at artist lofts. And he would speak and then personally distribute some finger food, some finger prasad. And while he was distributing the finger food, he'd make small talk with the people there. How are you? Really, what are you doing? That way he was the preacher, the cultivator, and the host, the hospitality expert, all rolled into one. So finally, some devotees started to get a little serious. And so the first initiation was held. But Satsarupa Maharaj describes he didn't show up. He was standoffish. And the next day, he turned up. And he went to see Prabhupada. And Prabhupada told him, this is not mechanical. If you love me, I'll love you. And he gave him some devotional service. And through that devotional service, the devotee matures. So this is the mystery of bhakti. The indebtedness that we feel is based on devotional service. And we pledge ourselves to eternally try to pay that debt to the parampara through devotional service. As devotees mature, their love matures, their ability to have genuine, loving relationships matures. And then we start to get a glimpse of what Krishna's pastimes are all about. We develop some eagerness. After years of dedicated devotional service, we start to get a taste, ruchi. Rupa Goswami gives the phases. Ado Shraddha. First, there's some kind of conviction that associating with devotees, taking up the process of bhakti, is the best thing. Then sadhu sangha, you decide, let me associate with these practitioners. That shraddha can be so small, it can even be just an appreciation. It can be so subtle. And then you associate with devotees, and your commitment becomes intensified, and your experience starts to accelerate. And then, in association with devotees, what do? Bhajana Kriya. You perform devotional service according to rules and regulations, not simply when you feel like it. Because you don't know your real feelings in the impure stage. I feel like this. I don't feel like that. You make me feel this way. You don't make me feel that way. Humility means I don't know so much about my feelings. Okay, I can't deny my emotions, but the point is I recognize that my emotions are impure. So we're not asking you to deny your emotions. We're asking you to recognize where they're really at and deal with them. So Bhajana Kriya means working on your emotions through the humble recognition that I'm a faulty emoter. And you can see that devotees who take their impure material emotions so seriously, it takes them a long time to make spiritual advancement, because actually they're hung up on the bodily conception of life. These impure emotions, they are a body, they're part of the subtle body. And the first thing you learn is you're not the body. So the process of bhakti recognizes that you have emotions. And yes, let's purify those emotions from the impure stage and make them fully spiritualized in Krishna's service. So bhakti is the most emotionally realistic process. It recognizes what is the shadow self and what is the real self. What is shadow emoting and what is real emoting. And there's a continuum how you go from one extreme to the ultimate. And you can gradually feel yourself developing in that way. So after performing devotional service, Bhajana Kriya, in the association of devotees, you notice anartana vritti. I'm actually becoming purified. I'm not doing crazy things anymore. Not only am I becoming purified of the gross things, I'm also becoming purified of the subtle things. Like when Lord Chaitanya cleaned the Gundicha Mandir. He got rid of all the gross particles, and then he went back and cleaned the second time and got rid of all the fine particles. Similarly, he's showing that first you get rid of the gross stuff. I could say that, it's like you follow the four regular principles. But then there's subtle stuff. You want to work on that too. You work on that by begging Krishna, please take me to a higher platform of love. And it's amazing how devotees can relate to one another once they get beyond the bodily platform. You start to understand, what was the culprit in destroying love? It was the very thing that you were so attached to, your own body and mind. It was getting in the way of real love. It's the body and mind that impede the flow of real love. Matter gets in the way of real love. There's no matter in Krishna's pastimes, so there's no impediments. Yet the process of bhakti is so extraordinary that it can take matter and spiritualize it. You know, the iron rod put in the fire is not fire, but it can act like fire. These are the secrets of Yukta Vairagya, which Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur calls confidential understandings of the Bhagavatam. as I explained, we may say, oh, yukta vairagya. Every new bhakta knows that expression. Use it in Krishna's service. Don't reject it. But this is a very elevated, confidential principle. We get it so easily assimilated because of the parampara have made the meaning of yukta vairagya so readily accessible and apparent in such a dramatic way. So once you start understanding that it is your physiology and psychology acting materially that is impeding real love, then you start to see what's going on. So we want a loving society of devotees. But there has to be that humility to want to progress in real love. Not to think, yeah, I know what love is. That's what the scientists are saying. We know what love is. Get out that oxytocin spray. Take an injection of testosterone. Love, what's the problem? Love is a neurochemical affair. We'll help you. We're going to give love a chance. Put yourself in our hands. So rasa-lila means we don't know what love is, but we want to know what love is. Sincere appreciation of a devotee comes through devotional service. Otherwise, what is there to appreciate? Oh, you really look good. What's there to appreciate about someone other than devotional service? But that bond through devotional service is the tightest bond of all. Nothing, no material bond can compare to the bonds in devotional service in terms of how deep those bonds are, how satisfying those bonds are. And when we look at Rasa Lila, that's the pinnacle of bonding. And there's not one trace of matter. And Krishna himself surrenders to the love of his dearest devotees. He's telling all of material existence, you talk about love of God at best, you talk about it. Many times don't even talk about it. But do you actually know what it is? Do you not actually know how the love of God transpires? Do you know the dynamics of it? It's nice that you're talking about it. Just like when I was a teenager, I heard a jazz record called A Love Supreme, in which the musician, foremost musician, was propagating on the cover that love of God's the ultimate goal of life. Wow, what is this? But I never got any information. What is God and how to love God? I just had an aspiration. But in the bhakti text, you find out what is God, how to love God, what's the process. And through that process, you lose your unwanted things, and then you develop taste for hearing about Krishna. And you develop attachment for Krishna. And in this way, your love of Krishna progressively starts to unfold. So the more devotees become mad for devotional service and care for those who are performing devotional service, the more you start to understand what real love is. And you feel fulfilled and satisfied. Knowing, yet, at the same time, there's so much more progress to be made. Not that I have attained a certain level. You'll never be feeling that now I've attained. Because we're following the six Goswamis of Vrindavan who are always feeling separation from Krishna. They always acted on the platform of our mission is unfulfilled. We can't get enough Krishna. We can't get enough bhakti. This is our heritage through Parampara. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.